I'm Dimae Roberts, stage and studio. We're listening to music by Portland musician David Arnett Cherry. Hear his music at davidarnettcherry.com. Hey, we're starting off the new year with the first of three shows featuring original works during the Fertile Ground Festival, which runs the last week of January through early February. But debuting before the festival is the world premiere of Bonnie Ratner's new play. It's called Blind, and it's about to get a full production from the Chapel Theater Collective. Blind runs January 17th through February 9th, and it's getting a head start on the Fertile Ground Festival. We're going to be talking with the playwright, Bonnie Ratner, her director, William Earl Ray, and Jason Glick, who stars in the play and is the artistic director of the Chapel Theater Collective that's producing the new work. Stay tuned. This is the first 2020 show on Stage and Studio. I'm Dimae Roberts. With me in the KABU studio are playwright Bonnie Ratner. Welcome back.
Thank you so much, Dimae. It's great to be here.
It's great to see you. And director William Earl Ray back in Portland. Mm-hmm. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
It's good to be. Are you permanently here?
I will be.
Soon?
Back in February.
That's next month,
That's
Bill.
Next month, yes.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're here. Glad to have you in Portland.
Thank you.
And the first-timer, Jason Glick, Artistic Director of the Chapel Theater Collective. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
It's good to have you here. Welcome all to stage and studio. It's very exciting for you, Bonnie, to have your play Blind get a full production. It's been a couple of years since the reading that you did in 2017 during Fertile Ground Festival, and how's it been? How's it grown?
How has the play grown?
Yeah,
I did. Actually, I learned a lot during the reading, and I had the opportunity over the last couple of years to go deeper into the characters, and that's been exciting. And I think that's probably the biggest growth. And the biggest change in Blind. So, you know, the Fertile Ground readings are so productive that way, you know.
You really felt that really gave you the impetus.
It really did. I mean, the reading was very successful. We had a great director, great cast for the reading, and the audience loved it. So it was very encouraging. That doesn't hurt, you know. And then I could see where, you know, I could take more time in the scene with this character. It take more time there, and it worked. It helped.
Well, did you all see the show? Did the reading?
I was lucky enough to play the same role I'm playing now.
Oh, okay.
In the
so
reading.
You did see it because you were in it.
I was lucky enough to be a part of it. Yeah.
So the play is set in 1967. The main character is Harold Stein, and he travels from his home on Long Island to the small shoe store that he owns, and it's located in a predominantly black Brooklyn neighborhood during 1967. Bonnie, tell us about why you wanted to write this play and why, you know, this time period and this, you know, this setting.
Sure. Well, Blind is actually a personal project for me. And this is, the play takes place exactly from December 67 to April 4th, 1968, which is a significant date,
certainly in history.
Right. The neighborhood itself is interesting, Bedford-Stuyvesant neighborhood at that time, because I think people hearing this will be able to see how much it resonates today. Back in 1907, the Williamsburg Bridge was built to Brooklyn, and there was a migration of Jewish and Italian populations from the Lower East Side to Bedford-Stuyvesant. And then in the 20s and 30s and 40s, there was the Great Migration of African Americans from the South up to the area. Caribbean immigrants also came to Brooklyn during that area. During that time period. And then during the war, the Brooklyn shipyards opened. So much like Vanport here, there was also a migration of African Americans into the area. Then there was some relative prosperity from the war days. And then you found the Jewish and Italian populations moving out to the suburbs, but keeping their stores in Brooklyn and in Bedford-Stuyvesant. And then something happened, which is where, you know, sort of like the question of whose fault is this comes up a lot in the play. So what happened then was there was an illegal practice of blockbusting, in which real estate agents actually scared people into selling their homes cheap, and then they would leave.
And they were people of color that they were scaring to leave.
No, they were scaring the white people.
Oh, the white? Oh, so that was the beginning of white flight then?
That's exactly
okay,
right.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it was the very beginning, but that was the beginning there.
I see.
That's what happened there. And so, yeah, it's always something to read that intention, you know, when you think about mass incarceration and you read the new Jim Crow. There's an intention going on. And so anyway, as a result of that, there was white flight and the Jews moved out to the suburbs in Queens. And so by the 1960s, like 85% of the population in Bedford-Stuyvesant in this area was black.
Are you familiar with this area then?
I'm very familiar with this area.
I didn't want to ask, but yeah.
Yes.
Do you have a personal experience with the East Coast?
This is based on my family story. The part that Jason plays is my father.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did
and
he own a
My father
a
owned a shoe store in
so
Bedford,
this is very
Stuyvesant.
Personal.
This is very personal. And when I was like 18-ish or like early 20s, in the late 60s, I was coming aware of my own political sensibility, and I was just furious with my dad. And I called him a ghetto merchant and, you know, all the things.
All the things we regret with.
All the things we do.
Yeah.
So this was an opportunity to, I'll do this really briefly. I reread Nathaniel Hawthorne's Scarlet Letter. And in the introduction to it, he actually makes this apology for his great-great-grandfather who was a judge in the Salem witch trials.
Wow.
And I was very struck by that. And so I wrote a short story first, like doing this sort of apology for my dad and to my dad at the same time. And it was a short story. It won a contest. It was read on San Francisco radio. Then it was a movie script. Judd Hirsch was attached, but it didn't get made. And then I moved to Portland, started writing for the theater again. I thought, let's try. So
wow,
that's
what
fun.
A journey.
Yeah.
And so the other characters, are they based, like, for instance, on your mom and
yes.
people in the neighborhood?
Yes, based on my mom. Sylvia Stein is based on my mom. Susan Stein is based on somebody else based on me.
Not necessarily you.
These are all composite characters.
Well, yeah,
you know,
they're representative. And so how about the neighborhood? How about the other characters?
The neighborhood is definitely composite characters, yeah.
Okay, wow. Yeah. Wow, I didn't realize that this was so personal to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no, I actually at different times worked in my father's store. I knew that store really well.
So you know how to sell shoes.
I do.
You still do.
I do.
Well, so, you know, in reading about some of the comments that you received during the reading, this really struck me. It says, it's funny, sexy, and I couldn't stop crying. So those are three very different directions.
Life is like that, yeah.
Right.
All
right.
At once, all
okay.
at one time okay. that happens.
It's very intriguing. So if it's comedy and drama and, you know, real life.
Yeah, ask Bill that
yeah,
question.
Yeah, Bill. So are you following that direction? Funny, sexy, and
yes,
and
actually, it's
crying.
Well, when I first read it, Bonnie had messaged me and asked me if I would be interested in reading her and doing her play. And I said, well, let me read it first. And that's basically what I said. And she said, okay.
Well, of course. Yeah.
So, and she sent it to me right away, actually.
Yeah.
And then I read it and I said, uh-oh. And I knew, I mean, in my opinion of it, I felt that it was very personal. And that struck me, you know.
It drew me.
Yeah, it drew me in. And I said, and I hit her right back. I said, yeah, I'm interested. And all those things are in there. The characters, I mean, they just pop off the page. I mean, they all have something that they all need and want and need to discover. And they're all in some type of pain and they all need some type of reconciliation. And that's, you get all of that in this play. And it's been a very, I mean, I have not left from rehearsal, not one night, and we have not accomplished something or found something. And the discussions between everybody, and everybody wants to make this play come alive and tell this story. And it's a very, it has a wonderful arc to it. And so we're discovering that arc. And it's just been a wonderful process that I've been a part of in this. And I'm glad I'm here for it.
Wow, that's really high praise, you know, because you're drawn to very complex material. I mean, August Wilson and then the No Play.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. So that's very good to hear that.
Yeah.
If you just joined us, I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. My guests are playwright Bonnie Ratner, and we've just heard from her director, William Earl Ray. And we're going to be talking also with actor and artistic director Jason Glick of the Chapel Theater Collective about the play Blind. And that's opening on January 17th, and it runs through February 9th. Jason, I asked you earlier, you know, why did you want to produce this? And you're the lead character, and you also happen to run a theater company. So that kind of answers it. But why don't you kind of fill in more blanks in there?
Well, you know, Bill sort of started to fill that in. Bobby Bermejo directed the stage reading, and he's such a talented director and was kind enough to bring me in to play Harold. And growing up Jewish and the family dynamics that Bonnie alluded to, the personal sense of loss and devotion to work and how that impacts the family and things are not unique to this story. It's something that is the older generation of Jewish dynamics and really not just Jewish, just, you know, devoted to work and pulling away. And it is such... There's scripts that are super easy to access as an actor and scripts that are harder, and this was immediate. This you understood where all these people were coming from. And as Bonnie said, the response to the reading and the talkbacks that we had were some of the most profound experiences I've had in the theater. It was immediately after the 2016 election, so... the conversations were very raw in response to the relatability of the civil rights era. And so the minute that I was brought on to be co-artistic director at Chapel Theater Collective, one of the first scripts I thought of was Blind and told Bonnie that. And so it's just taken a season for us to slot it in.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that you have a personal cultural connection to the character. I'm glad to hear that, because quite often, you know, a lot of plays that have Jewish characters are not necessarily played by Jewish actors. So I, you know,
sure.
I think that's, you know, that's important, you know, to have that connection.
Yeah, and I think you saying it, you know, culturals, whatever religion you are, there has to be a sort of understanding of the Jewish, I don't know, je ne sais quoi, if you will, that there is a real cultural dynamic to it.
So would you say the play, and I'm going to bring Bill into this too, and Bonnie, has, you know, does it deal with, because I haven't seen it, but does it deal with the Jewish and Black connection? Because there has been, you know, throughout the history of America. So I'm just wondering.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Without question.
How this play speaks to that.
Without question, it does. And I think that what it does, as Bonnie said, it is set in between 67 and 68. But it is so relevant into what's going on even still today. It mirrors what's happening today a lot.
In what way?
Some of the same things happening. It's like things don't change. I mean, as much as things change, they stay the same for whatever reason. And so we have this whole thing with, Jason just pointed it out, with started in 2016, you know, in the current administration. And all this hatred that has been it's just coming right back around. It's like, I never thought for myself that I would see my daughter see what I've seen.
And it's happening again.
And it's happening
again. The racism
again.
And the anti-Semitism.
Yes. Yeah.
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 Yeah. That's sad to note, and I don't disagree, you know.
Yeah.
It does seem like, you know, this play deals with a time of great, you know, change and, you know, turbulence, and yet we are experiencing that again even more in some respects.
But with the other thing too, I think with Bonnie's play is that there is, it's interesting that before I came over here today, I saw the last speech that Michelle Obama made before leaving the White House. And it was based on what she said, hope. And I think and feel that
this is a coordinated monthly test of the emergency alert system through broadcast stations in the greater Portland, Vancouver area, including Clackamas, Columbia, Multnomah, and Washington counties in Oregon, and Clark County in Washington. With the cooperation of public safety broadcasters and cable operators, this system informs you of events that pose an immediate threat to your life, health, or property. If this had been an actual emergency, official information would have followed the alert tone. This test was originated by Clark Regional Emergency Services Agency in Vancouver, Washington. This concludes this test message.
This year's Fertile Ground Festival of New Works and Fertile Ground is an 11-day citywide festival of original performances. You can find out more about it at fertilegroundpdx.org. And we're going to feature more of Fertile Ground offerings later this month. But you can get a head start on the festival by going to see Blind at Chapel Theater Collective. And more info on that is tickets are available at chapeltheatercollective.com. I have all that info on stageandstudio.org and kbu.fm/stageandstudio. And I want to talk more about the play, but before that, Chapel Theater Collective. Jason, give us a brief history of that. Because it's relatively new theater. Relatively.
It is a new theater. Yeah. It's in Milwaukee, just on Harrison, about a mile from downtown Selwood. And we had a very well-received first season last year. And into our second season, the prior show was Bakersfield Mist, which we just did. And then this is our Fertile Ground slot. So it started
as a reading series, though, didn't it?
No.
Oh, okay.
It started with three co-artistic directors, me, Danielle Weathers,
yeah,
and Aaliyah De Torres. And what you're referring to is Danielle Weathers is head of the reading parlor.
Right.
And that's a separate entity.
Okay.
And the amount of time that required, she just, you know, had to devote time one or the other, and doing both was taking a lot of her time. And so she chose to step down from as a core company member of Chapel Theater Collective and really go back to running readers reading parlor,
right.
Which is her baby. And so now that leaves Aaliyah De Torres, who co-owns Chapel Theater, the space, with his wife Corinne and me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're off to a great start, you know, doing full productions right off the bat. So,
yes.
Yeah, that's kudos to you, especially in an area that, you know, it's more neighborhoody.
It's growing.
You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bill, from a directorial perspective, how is the Chapel Theater space to direct in?
Different. It's small.
It's more of an intimate space.
It's a very intimate space.
How many seats do you have, Jason?
We seat up to 99.
Well, that's still pretty big, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the stage area is rather
small.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and so it presents some challenges, but we're getting through those challenges.
Yeah,
there are a lot of scene changes in Bonnie's play.
Oh, Bonnie. Well, it has a year-long span, so can't wear the same, you know, same costumes, right?
So I'm learning. So I'm learning.
But we're doing a good job, though. And the actors are very excited about this process, and they're volunteering to do whatever they can to help make the transitions work. And so those are the things that that we're working on now, going into Tech Week.
Yeah,
this weekend.
I was going to ask you what stage of rehearsal you're in.
We're in Tech on this week, this coming weekend.
Well, I'm glad you can make it before Tech, because you know, for those not in the know, Tech can be quite excruciating.
Yes.
of a process, technical rehearsals. Let's talk about the rest of the cast. We have Jason Glick in it, and also the lovely Andrea White, who gave an incredible performance in a play I produced recently, as well as the No Play, which Bill directed last year for Pass and Art. Tell us about the rest of the cast. I mean, what does Andrea play? I was curious.
She plays the mother to one of the young people, played by
Blake Stone.
Thank you. And I'm going to let Jason do the cast.
Well, you got Anthony Green.
Yeah, it goes back to the question you asked earlier, Dume, about the interaction of the African-American community and the Jewish community. Andrea plays the sort of catalyst for Harold's whole arc. She is the African-American mother of a boy who is involved in a robbery of my store.
Oh,
And opens my eyes to other options than just dismissing him outright.
Good.
And so she's a really pivotal piece of it, along with Blake, who's playing her son, and then Tony Green is playing another store owner in the neighborhood, who is much more resistant to changing his perspective about things. And then Jill Westerby is playing my wife, Sylvia, based on Bonnie's mother. And Isabella Buckner is playing Jill and Mai's daughter, loosely based on Bonnie. And
very loosely based.
Yeah, that's right.
Very little resemblance.
And I think I hit everybody there.
Yes.
Isabella, Blake, I think that's everybody.
That's everybody.
Yeah.
Six guys.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like a really good cast. And,
it's a wonderful cast.
They're great people. I mean,
wonderful.
We are.
Well, the playwright's happy. That's all that matters.
Yeah, I mean, everyone is really just coming devoted to the work and collaboration. It's a really... really fun process, as Bill said.
Well, what has been the rehearsal process, Bill? What, how do you work?
Hard. I'm very hands-off type director.
Really? Okay.
I let people do their thing, and then I just give food for thought.
Okay.
And then I let the actors tell me what to do.
Interesting.
For the most part.
Yeah.
I see them doing something and I'm saying, okay, well, let's try this. And
well, you tell them what doesn't work.
Yeah, basically. And I shape it.
And that's important.
Yeah. Because I see pictures. I put pictures on stage, is what I do.
Mm.
It's like flipping through a photo album. And you see all these different pictures that tell stories. If people put their pictures in a photo album in an appropriate way that tells a story, it's like cartoons that are made. You know, they have to keep drawing the different cartoons in order for the cartoons to tell the story. You know, so I just sort of do that sort of thing. And I used to do it on paper, and now I just do it visually, and I see it visually, like a painter.
I can get that.
Yeah.
I mean, and also, you know, in terms of this play, maybe it's like a family photo album, you know, flipping through
same,
the year.
Same,
you know?
same sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it may confuse the actors because I don't like symmetricality very well.
Mm-hmm.
We don't sit in or move through life in that way, and things are at angles for me, and so
I'm blocking you, so I'm going to sit over here.
You know, and sometimes I will put a back to the audience.
Interesting.
But actors are taught not to turn their backs to the audience. It's like, well, I didn't make that rule, so I don't normally go by that rule.
I think rules should be bent.
I think rules should be bent, yes.
I
and
so,
so. But for me, the focus is wherever the focus is. And if the focus is not on you, then your back can be to the audience. It's okay. It's fine. It's a different picture.
Yeah.
You know, so, and sometimes the actors don't get that from me. It's like, well, what are you doing? I mean, and they may not think I know what I'm doing, but I know what I'm doing.
Jason's like,
he's being very humble. He does give you the freedom to contribute what your role is, but he's also been a very hands-on guide with intuition and intention behind his vision for the piece.
Well, it's good to hear. And Bonnie, from your perspective, lots of rewrites?
From this show, not too many.
Ah,
actually,
okay.
We have fine-tuned.
Yeah.
Very few scenes so far. I'm going to impose on Bill when it's all over to like debrief with me just before I send it out. You know.
Oh yeah, but, yeah. Final draft.
Have to think about those short scenes. And
well, I have to say you're very prolific, Bonnie, and you really persevere to full production. So, do you think that's your best advice to a playwright, you know? Just keep writing, keep pushing it, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Keep sending it out.
You know, if you don't love to keep writing, then you're not a writer.
I think the whole thing of having it, and obviously Bonnie's been with this place since what, however long, and having it done and reading it and whatever, and that process gone from, what, 2016 or 17 to now, which is now 2019, 2020. I think that's a good thing because, for me, a lot of these, there are a lot of good new playwrights out there, but I don't think they workshop their plays. They throw them out there, they get popular, and all of a sudden you see a play on stage that needs a lot of work.
That's interesting.
But it's already published, so is it going to get any more work out of it? Mostly, no, it won't. But because someone else has produced it,
then it's like done.
It's like done.
And really, a play is real. I mean, honestly, Bonnie, is a play ever really done? You know, from a writer's perspective, there's always something you could tweak.
You know, noodle. Well, one of the things that's what I loved about August Wilson. I mean, his plays were tweaked for a year before he went on to the start out of the process.
That was the old format, right?
Yes.
It's not necessarily happening now.
Well, it's not, and I don't know if the money is around either. Because
right.
he was in a place where he could, Ben Mordecai, the guy who helped produce those plays, would take the play from here to there to there and then reach Broadway. So he had that.
Right.
That. But I don't know if these writers today have it. I don't know.
Well, you get a chance to see a play that's been tweaked for two or more years. Chapel Theater Collective presents the world premiere of Blind by Bonnie Ratner, directed by William Earl Ray. It's part of the Fertile Ground Festival 2020. Runs January 17th through February 9th. And shows are Thursdays through Saturdays at 7:30, Sundays at 2 p.m. If you want to meet the playwright herself, Bonnie's doing a talkback on January 19th after the Sunday matinee. More info at chapeltheatercollective.com. And we're running out of time. Bonnie Ratner, William Earl Ray, Jason Glick, Break Legs. Great to visit with you today.
Thank you, Dean.
You too. Thank you.
First show of 2020. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
That's it for Stage and Studio. We're going to feature two more shows this month about the Fertile Ground Festival, so stay tuned. I'll have the podcast of this show online at stageandstudio.org and kboo.fm/stageandstudio. And you can like us on facebook.com/stageandstudio. Till next time, I'm Dimae Roberts.